This is going to sound weird, but this is probably a little bit of a statement of who I am. Debbie laughs. When we got back to our room last night, I already have a longing for a reunion. I really do. Yeah. You know? I'm going to miss you guys. And really, as I look around the room, I don't know everybody by name, but I certainly know you by face. And for the most part, we've had the privilege of sharing each other's stories, right? And they're so similar. And so we're bonded by this common faith. We love Jesus Christ. And it is the most amazing thing. You see me get misty-eyed because I understand how much he loves us. And at the same time, I understand the brokenness that's in me, and I suspect it's in you. But it's a healthy brokenness because we understand that our life is simply to be given away. And the only gift that I have to give God and the only gift that you have to give God is your life. And so what do you do with that gift? It becomes absolutely critical. We're ambassadors of the King, the conquering King, the King that loves us unconditionally. And I just think, why would he love me? I know who I am. I know the mistakes that I've made in life. But see, this is the thing about God. He can't not love me because he is love. So all we have to do is embrace his love, walk in his love, live in his love, and share his love with those people that are most important to us. And you're sitting right next to him. Okay? So I want to start off this morning. And by the way, are you guys coming back next year? I'm coming back. Debbie doesn't even know this. We'll probably be living in Arizona, but we're coming back. Yeah, seriously. Now, I know there's couples here, at least a couple couples that have been here all 3 years, right?
4 years.
4 years, okay. I'm sorry, four. And Dave, I want to applaud you for, you know, this ministry. Yeah. So important. I mean, yeah, it is. Yeah. You're quite a cook. Multi-dimensional here. So, hey, I want to start off with this. Carolyn and Chris get married. And on their wedding day, they get 23 marriage books. So Carolyn wants to talk about conflict resolution. Chris wants to talk or read about the book Sex and Intimacy. Carolyn says, no, we need to talk about conflict resolution so that when there's conflict in our sexual intimacy, we'll know how to navigate that. Doesn't that sound like the first fight? So, really, you got to wonder why God made men and women so different. But I think I know why. Because this woman has refined me. She's taught me how to love. She's taught me how to receive love. And she's also taught me how to give love. And I bet you the woman and the man sitting next to you is doing the same thing. And I'll also say to you, they're probably not doing it perfectly. Yeah. And that's where grace and forgiveness comes in, right? So I love to read. I love to read everything that has to do with marriage and relationships. And really, this is my favorite book on marriage, Tim Keller, The Meaning of Marriage. Very scripturally based, very powerful. This is really a gifted writer, a gifted communicator, a pastor of a large church in New York City. But when it's all said and done, this is the best relational book that you will ever read. It spanned generations and cultures. The wisdom that every one of us needs is in this book. But the challenge is applying it, right? So, hey, I want to share something. Oftentimes what Debbie and I will do when we first do premarital with a couple, the first time we meet, we'll show them a picture of someone out of the newspaper who's been married for 50 years. And I'll ask them, what do you know about this couple? Do you know them? And of course they don't. But I'll say to them, for somebody who's been married for 50 years, what observations can you draw that would be totally accurate? So I'm going to ask you, what observations can you draw of a couple that's been married 50 plus years? What do you think has happened in that life?
Weathered some storms.
They stayed the course.
Communication.
They didn't give up. They learned to communicate. What else?
They had to forgive each other.
They learned to be good forgivers.
They became closer.
What's that?
They became closer.
They became closer. Do you think they had some hardships?
Absolutely.
Think there were some trials? Do you think there were times when they wanted to give up? But they stayed the course. And that's what we need to do too. If you believe in marriage, you stay the course. If you believe in God's love, not only do you practice that love, but you stay the course. It's important that we stay the course. I think I shared this on Friday night. It's been my experience in counseling with men in particular, that a lot of men haven't made decisions about who they are, what they believe in, and how they're going to live their lives. But I suspect that also applies to a lot of women too. And so I'm here to encourage you, if what I'm saying applies to you, anchor yourself in the love of Christ, and the most amazing things will happen over the course of time. You'll be transformed into somebody that you never would have expected that you would become. So Deb, you're on.
I already shared that the first few years, especially of our blended family, were really hard on me, maybe on us, I don't know. But I had a defining moment during those years. And it's always my prayer that when I speak to either women or as we come here to you guys this weekend, that God will speak something to you in such a way that you know that He's defined something for you. It's like that still small thing, like that. You leave here taking something with you. And so I want to share with you a defining moment that I had in the blended family that actually has changed everything for me, and it continues to change everything for me, even this day. And when Ray was talking about, you know, like connecting to God's love and living out of God's love, this defining moment really has helped me with that. And it started when our youngest son, my biological son, wanted a hamster for his 9th birthday. All he wanted was a hamster. And I had told the kids, we're having no hamsters. There's no rodents of any kind in our household. Now, I know they're not officially rodents, but to me, hamster, yes. Rat, I don't care. We're not having it in our house. So I had said no. But a dear, sweet relative named Grandma, which I understand this now, bought our son the only thing he really wanted for his birthday, which was a hamster. Now, it was when I was gone at work, so I came home from work one day, and there was my son sitting on the front porch with the little cage, with the little wheel in it back in those days, and he's sitting there with a giant smile on his face. He has a big sign that he made out of butcher paper that said, "Welcome home, Jif." He had named the hamster after his favorite food of the day, which was Jif peanut butter, and he was so happy, and for the sake of my son and the joy that this hamster had already brought him on his 9th birthday, we kept Jif. So there's a problem with pets and kids. They tell you that they will take care of them, they will clean them, but we are all laughing because we know that is not the case. Amen. So just became another chore for mom, right? But there's also another problem with hamsters. Sometimes they escape their cage. Often they're smelly little creatures, and they run on the wheel at night. They're nocturnal. So Jeff comes to live with us. And now my life is very complicated because we have my mother living with us because she's elderly and needs help. So she's in the downstairs bedroom. My stepdaughters are in their room. My sons are in the room next to the girls. And Ray and I are down the hall in our room. And Jif is living in the boys' room. And so the first night that we have Jif, everybody's sleeping soundly. And I'm down the hall in my room, and all I can hear is the cage running. That's all I can hear all night long. And so I sleep a little, but not very much. I get up in the morning, I'm trying to hold it together, I'm still trying to be cheerful, Mom. But I manage okay the first day. But the second night, I'm tired because I really didn't sleep the first night much. And so when you're tired, everything in life is exaggerated, right? Any problem's exaggerated. So I'm trying to lay down in my room, and everybody's asleep, and now the wheel sounds like, squeak! It's just like magnified in my head. So all night, I'm putting the pillow over my head, I'm tossing and turning. That night, are wondering what's wrong with me. And I'm just going to tell you, like I said to them, you know, I haven't gotten any sleep for 2 nights, okay? And you know that saying, a mama ain't happy? Nobody's happy. And a mama's not sleeping, she's not happy. So there you have it. So third night, everybody's asleep. Finally, 1 a.m., I cannot take it one second longer. I get up in frustration, throw my robe on, I go down the hall to the kids' room, I go into the boys' room, and I lift the privacy towel off of sweet little Jip's cage that had a home sweet home Jip sign above it. And I did what any mama knows to do when there's a problem in the house. I'm going to deal with it. And I got eye to eye with Jip, and I got down on his level, and I said, Jip, where are you going? What are you doing? Can you not see? You're in the cage. You're not going anywhere. Stop it. Stop it. And he loved the sound of my voice. And so he ran faster and harder, almost like he was defying me. And I stood there so frustrated, and the kids are still asleep. And we're upstairs, and I'm thinking, I could throw him out the window. Nobody would know. But I'm not that evil of a mommy. And so then I thought, and then the bathroom is the next room, and I heard of people flushing them down. But I'm not that evil of a mommy either, so instead I went down the hall back to our bedroom where my husband was still sleeping through all that. And I put the covers over my head, and I began to cry. And I'm talking snot crying, like so frustrated. I hadn't slept. My life was hard in this blended family. And I'm crying out to God, and I'm saying, Jesus, I hate Jeff. I don't like this answer. And then he said, yes, you are, because you're just on a different wheel. You've been running your whole life. Gotta be better. Gotta try harder. Gotta be enough. Gotta be a good mom. Gotta be a good stepmom. Gotta be a good wife. Gotta be a good friend. Gotta be a good Christian. Oh no, and now I'm in this family, and I have to love, and I don't know how to be kind, and I don't know how to be sacrificial because it's too hard, and I don't like the in-laws, outlaws, and ex-laws. I'm ready. Come on, Jesus, come on. Let's do this thing. And that night, under my covers, this was the real defining moment. Jesus invited me to step off the wheel, and that's why I'm sharing this with you this morning. You see, I was trying so hard to love in my strength. I knew the scripture. I was standing on the scripture. I was claiming the scripture. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is long-suffering. Love keeps no records of wrong. I knew the scripture. I was quoting the scriptures to myself while I'm running on the wheel. And that night, under those covers in my frustration, this was the true defining moment. Sunday school Jesus verse. Come to me, all of you who weary and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Matthew 11:28. I knew that verse, but that night I realized that I was being invited into something deeper than I had ever lived in before. And I'm not just talking about the frustration and the complications of a blended family. I was being invited, because my life was difficult, I was being invited to follow him in such a way that I could live in soul rest and that I could get off the wheel no matter how hard my life was. You see, I realized that night that even though I knew that verse, that I never knew how to really come to him. It was just words, come to me. That night I realized that come meant that I would change directions. There would be a directional turn in my life. And that night he invited me not only off the wheel, but to change my direction. And my direction would be, if I were to love, then I would have to connect with him daily so that his love could flow through me, and then it could flow out from me. But without that connection, it wasn't going to happen. And that night under my covers, everything began to change for me, because I laid there and I thought, Jesus, I knew that verse. But Jesus, tonight you're inviting me to come. You're inviting me to have a different kind of Christian walk. You see, my walk with Jesus is like two different books. The first volume is The Stepford Woman, where I learned a lot of information. I really had very little life transformation. I was in ministry and I acted full, but I was really secretly empty. But then she crashed and burned with the divorce and now the blended family. And so now the second volume of my book, which I will be living till I take my last breath, I call The Beginning of Something Deeper. So for me, every morning when I wake up, it is the opportunity to go into a different direction. It is the opportunity to connect with Jesus. Jesus, it's the opportunity to have another day where I can go a step deeper with him and that I can experience something that I can't experience on my own. And so as I end my part here, like I not only am in a minute am I going to say the few things that I did wrong as a stepmom. How many speakers get up and say, I want to tell you the things I did wrong. I want to expose myself in hopes that it might help you. But what I really want you to hear is that for every one of us, it doesn't matter how long you have been a believer, whether it's been 2 days or, 40 years, it doesn't matter. Jesus invites us to the place of coming to him new every single day. And we need to connect. If we do not connect, we will not have power. Can you imagine what it would look like if I was like at the sink, like trying to blow dry my hair and my blow dryer wasn't plugged in and my hair was totally wet and Ray walked by, he'd be like, she has lost it. Now I know she's lost it because I'd be just doing this with no power. Nothing's happening. My hair is like wet because I need to plug in the blow dryer for there to be power. The same is true with our lives. We have to be plugged into the power source. So women, I just want to tell you, I just want to highlight my top 10 mistakes. I'm not going to go into all of them because we've talked about some of them, but the first thing that I did that didn't work and it made things worse was I assumed we would just be one big happy family. It was the wrong assumption. We were not one big happy family. Even to this day, we all have had to admit that we have to manage our expectations. Because though even all of our children wish that we were one big happy family, and even though we really do all love one another, we have a family text that we put our prayers on and our emergencies on and everything. We stay as connected as we can. But when push comes to shove, when we all get together, there's all these different grandkids now, and there's people drawing their own like little biological lines, and nobody says a thing, but you can feel it. And then we kind of laugh, like, yes, we do the best we can. but we're as happy of a family as we can be, and we all love Jesus. But this is not an intact nuclear family. The second thing I did wrong is I pretended that I was the real mom. I don't really need to go into that too much, but that's a disaster because stepmoms, you're not the real mom. You are somebody that God has placed in their life, and he's placed you there for a very good purpose. Maybe you might want to try to take a different stance in your heart and just think, I'm going to be the praying mom. I pray for my kids every single day, my children and my stepchildren and their children. I want to pass this on to you. If Ray told you about a marriage book, I'm going to tell you about a prayer book. There's a book that really was life-changing for me. I didn't read the book, The Circle Maker by Mark Addison, but I bought at Hobby Lobby by a fluke. Because I love 40-day and 30-day things, and there was a 40-day prayer challenge called Draw the Circle by Mark Batterson. I picked it up 2 years ago thinking that I would start it in January and I would do a little 40-day prayer challenge, and doesn't that sound like a fun way to start the year? It absolutely radically changed my life. I'm still doing it every 40 days. I'm still doing it like every day 2 years later. But the people that I pray for that are in my prayer challenge every day are my children, my stepchildren, their spouses, and my grandchildren, and of course, Ray. And every single month, I start and I contact them. So this is the kind of mom I can be, I guess is what I'm saying. Their own mom doesn't do this because she has a different bond with them. She is a mom in a different way, in a good way. She's their mom. But every month at the beginning of the month, I will text not only my children, but my stepchildren, and I will just say, it's time for me to fill up my circles new again. If you asked for prayer for anything last month, let me know what happened. And if you have anything new this month, let me know. And so I highlight and check off the answers. Like this month, for instance, our son needed a job near where they moved. So he was commuting from Roseville all the way down to Cupertino to work at Apple. He'd been there for 7 years and he needed a job closer to home. That was in the circle this month. This month, starting tomorrow, he has a new job in El Dorado Hills. So God answered the prayer that month. So I get to highlight and like, yay, Jesus. But we start off the new month with me being the mom that says to them, how can I pray for you this month? And it, I mean, we range from, pray that my child would be able to poop in the potty, to I need a new job. This is like a big range. So instead of pretending to be the real mom, I get to be a different kind of mom. I get to let Jesus shape what kind of mom I'm going to be. The other problem I did is I pretended that my children's stepdad was dad enough for them. Ray's an amazing man. You've already experienced it. And so I just wanted to pretend, my boy's dad was just kind of out of the picture, so I just wanted to pretend that this is enough for my kids. But here's the reality. They have daddy-shaped holes in their hearts because they didn't have their dad around. He just kind of left us, and he's just kind of been in and out of their lives throughout their life. And that has been painful for them. And though they love Ray, it's very clear in their minds that Ray isn't their dad, but he is their father. So they have a biological dad, but he can be the father. But I really pushed him on them a lot. The other thing we talked about this, I relinquished discipline of my natural children too soon. I don't need to talk about that, but I do want to talk about the next one. One of the things I did wrong is I lived in my emotions. I'm just going to read what I wrote here. If you make your problems precious, they will poison you. Sometimes we do this with our emotions. We allow them to control us and move us in ways that don't honor God. Quit complaining about every little thing and start praying about every little thing. Live in faith and not in emotions. It's a choice. It might be the hardest one that we've made in a long time, but in the blended family, this choice will go a long way. What page is that? 210. Thanks.
Jenny, if you read the book, you'd know that.
Another thing I did wrong is I didn't realize the spiritual implications that God placed me in the life of my stepchildren for his purposes. When you think of it that way, then you can have vision. It's like a ministry. It's like a great adventure. I don't have to be their mom, but I have been divinely placed in their lives and them in mine for a reason. When I look at it that way, then I can move beyond myself. And then another thing that I did wrong is I refused for a long time to get better because I just wanted to be better. I'm just gonna say, you know? I mean, sometimes we just wanna feel the ugly. It doesn't serve us well, but we just wanna feel it. And for me, a lot of times it wasn't with my ex-spouse anymore, but it was my new wife-in-law. I just wanted to be bitter at her. I just wanted to pick her apart. I just wanted to be mad at her. And I'll tell you what, it goes back to will you make your problems precious by nurturing them instead of giving them to God, and they will poison you. So at the end of the day, we can have all kinds of great ideas about marriage and about stepfamilies, but the only thing that counts at the end of the day is that we're connected to Jesus. Because it says in John 15 that without being connected to him, we can't do anything of eternal significant value. We have to stay connected to Jesus. And I love the words of Jesus there in John 15 because he says that he talks about connecting. And then he says, I have told you this so that my joy would be in you and that your joy would be full. And I know that we think we'll be full of joy if our stepfamilies really work out and our marriages are awesome. And yes, that will be great. But that isn't the source of joy. The source of joy is being connected to God, so that his joy would be in us and our joy would be full. And when that is happening in our lives, it doesn't matter what our circumstances are. We'll just go through another circumstance. We'll just go through another trial. We'll just go through another hard knock, but don't go through it on the wheel. I gotta try harder, Get off the wheel and sit your little self down and don't make it harder than it is, because sometimes we don't do it because we think it's too hard. You can do it driving in your car, turn off the music, just start talking to Jesus. You can just do it like when you get your coffee, just sit your little self down and put your coffee down for a minute and don't open your phone for a minute and just sit yourself down and go, God, here we are, another new day, and I'm coming to you. I'm walking in your direction. I want to be connected to you. I want your love to be in me, and I want your love to flow through me. And so I think that is probably one of the greatest things that we could share in leaving you today. You're up.
Well, so we've talked a lot about divorce in regards to being a loss, but there's other people in this room that have other losses that are equally great, if not greater. And we were talking to Dave last night, and this is something that is really on his heart. And so we're going to ask Dave to come forward and just share. And so if you do that, Dave.
Come on, Dave.
Yeah, come on, Dave. Thank you, Dave.
I was reflecting as they were teaching last night of the impact of, honestly, the pain that's been in this room that folks have walked through, and the joy that's in this room at the same time of these relationships that you have, and the joy that it just fills my heart watching that you're willing to make the sacrifice to be here for the course of a weekend, knowing that there's a great return on the investment. Mm. And honestly, I wish there were a whole lot more people like you that'd be willing to do that, because statistically, these second marriages, particularly with blended families, tend to have a lot of stress factors, and the divorce rates can be high there as well. My story is different, and a couple of you folks in here have already shared that your story is different as well, in that mine was not a divorce and remarriage from my end. I had a really, really strong, strong marriage in just an incredible 25 years, and then Terry contracted breast cancer, and she was an RN, and she came alongside me and said, look, because of the stage of this, this is a serious deal. And unless the Lord chooses to do a miraculous healing, there's probably a significant chance that I'm going to pass away in a few years. And she did. She fought it for 3.5 years and then went home to be with the Lord. Obviously, you've heard the story and the fun part of it with Leslie, but the tragic part of it is all that she lived through with her husband at that time, who became the ex, and then particularly the three older kids had nothing to do with their father. The two younger ones had more to do with them simply because of court order and because they were young enough where they couldn't make the decision process for themselves. It allowed him to have visitation rights. The hard part of that is he wouldn't show up. The hard part of that is he'd promise them to be there at a certain time, and 2 hours later he'd show up. Things such as that that just grieved my heart. So where I'm going with this, for those of you who have been through a situation where one of your spouses has had a hard background of a divorce, and then the other spouse has been in a relationship where they've lost their spouse to death, the one thing that I was thinking about last night as you guys were teaching that just, actually, it always moves me to tears, because I was given the opportunity to love again, like you folks have. But more than that, I was given the opportunity to love a woman like Christ wanted her to be loved in the first time in her marriage relationship. So I was able to pour into her like she hadn't been poured into previously. And then more than that, I learned as a step-parent that I had the opportunity to pour into my step-kids in a way that God calls a father to be, where their actual I thank you so much for teaching on the whole biological thing, because that really opened my eyes to a lot of things, so thank you. But it allowed me to pour into my kids, my stepkids' lives, like I'd already poured into and continue to pour into my biological kids, from the standpoint of, I get to love them in such a way. Mm-hmm. Lord, you're allowing me and giving me the opportunity to love them in such a way that they haven't been loved before. So I would encourage you folks from that standpoint too. And for those of you who have gone through the loss of a loved one or loved ones, that, man, you've got a spouse that wants to pour into you, that wants, and vice versa. So that's really what I was just thinking about last night.
Yeah. Thank you, Dave. Thank you. Jenny, you are such an instigator. So, leading the clapping.
I want him to hire me.
She told me that.
Oh, did she? Yeah. So, it's I'll share something. Another Jenny story. And it's a sweet story. So our church, Blue Oaks Church, we meet at Foothill High School in Pleasanton. And a couple years ago, we started what we called Everyone Campaign, trying to raise money to buy a facility and a building. And because when we meet in high school, I mean, there's limitations on what you can really do, especially during the week in regards to getting people together. And the Everyone Campaign, they had different meetings over the course of time, and we had opened up our house, and The particular evening that it was at our house, we had flown in the consultant from Texas, and he just happened to be there, and he was standing in the hallway with me, and we could see the two people who were presenting, and anyways, Jenny walks in a little bit late, and she's so vivacious and bubbly and so loving, and so, you know, she gives me a hug, I give her a hug, and so we're just kind of quietly talking, and then she looks over at this gentleman who she doesn't recognize, and she says, "Well, why are you here?" And not knowing that this guy is, I mean, we're paying this guy to be here. I mean, he's the big guy. I mean, this really is about his wisdom in regards to planning churches and raising money. And he was just so taken back, and it was just so funny. And part of it probably was because I know how sweet this woman is, and it's just her nature to be so loving and so vivacious, and so it really was cute. I hope that was okay for me to tell. Yeah. And I'm sure Matt could tell a lot of Jenny stories. So, let me find my place here, gang. So what I wanted to talk about is being a different kind of dad, but one of the things that I wanted to share that was sparked by Dave, and I think, you know, so often it's really powerful to be able to tell stories like Debbie telling the GIF story, and I'm sitting over here thinking, oh my goodness, where are you going with this? Of course, I know, and I'm thinking from an audience standpoint, she's talking about a hamster. There's got to be a point here, and, you know, it took a while to get there, but it's really a funny story, and it has a lot of practical application, right? Because it really does describe who we are in regards to our relationship with Christ, and there was a time when I was at Costco, and for those of you who have shopped at Costco, you know roses are like $14. You get a couple of dozen. It's not like going to the florist where they, you know, show up in your doorstep, and they're beautifully, you know, in a vase. And anyways, but I was at Costco, and for some reason, I was really excited about buying Debbie roses, because I know one of her, one of the things that really lights her up is small gifts and gifts and jewelry in particular, but we don't always do that. But that's part of her love language, right? And so anyways, I was so excited to bring those roses home. And you know, so I put them on the counter, and you know, maybe about 5 or 10 minutes later, Debbie came down, and they were sitting on the counter, and she walked by, and I didn't get the kind of response that I really thought that I deserved, you know? Good job, husband. And anyways, and so then, probably about a half hour later, I'm back downstairs. Those roses are still sitting on that counter. And I'm thinking, why haven't you put them in a vase? How come you're not more appreciative? And really where I'm going with this, we allow the enemy to steal our joy because we attach some expectation to something as insignificant as just simply buying a couple of dozen roses. And he does such a great job. And I remember there was a time when I was counseling with a couple, and they were getting ready to go to a soccer match. And after the soccer match, they knew they were going to end up at the pizza parlor, and they were going to be there with their ex. And so they were really kind of concerned about, how do we do this? And they had all kinds of expectations about, how do we do this? And I just said, lower your expectations, and you'll be just fine. Because when we heighten our expectations, we get disappointed when it doesn't go exactly the way that we want it to go. And, you know, the enemy's really great also stirring the pot with fear. You know, they were fearful. Okay, is this going to go well? Is there going to be conflict? Are we going to embarrass ourselves in front of our kids? Just slow down. Don't have these heightened expectations. It just doesn't serve as well. So. Okay, so I want to talk about, as we transition here, becoming a different kind of dad, and, you know, called to be a leader by love and example. And really, truthfully, I never would have ever thought or dreamed that I would be in a blended family. I grew up in an intact family. My dad was an incredible man. He loved my mother well, and they were married for about 35 years, and then my dad passed away with cancer at 58, and But I had a good foundation. I knew what it was like to be a godly man. And even as I say a godly man, I'm not sure my father had a relationship with Christ, but he sure conducted himself with integrity. He loved my mother well. And so I had that snapshot as a son of how you're supposed to love a wife. And I think that's a really important consideration for us. Our kids are watching. We're teaching our kids how to be a husband, how to be a wife, how to be a mother, and how to be a father. And in blended families, let's face it, it gets a little steeper, the climb, because you don't have the kids as often. You know, oftentimes people will say, well, you know, in these divorce situations, it's all about quality time. Well, I'm here to tell you, having lost my kids to Colorado and going from having them half-time to seeing them about 60 days out of the year, it's not about quality time. I mean, that's important, but it's really about quantity time. Because how are they going to really know who you are, how you live, what you value, if you're not spending banks of time with them? So, well, I have to tell you, it's been a privilege to be a stepdad. It really has. And for me, I never thought that I would have the kind of influence that I've had the privilege of having over two young men that have turned out to be incredible young men, good husbands, good fathers. You know, it's only the grace of God. But I do believe that we modeled health in our relationship. We always took our kids to church. We always made that a priority. And so even though we didn't have that biological bond, we became love-related. I had shared with you that one of the best gifts I have ever given my wife is to learn to love her children. And even as I say that, it's not a natural thing, so don't pressurize yourself. Don't tell your husband or our wife that they have to love your kids. Let them learn to love them. And let's face it, some people are harder to love than others, right? And so let's be fair about this. And but I would encourage you and compel you to understand that when you married into a blended family, you have the responsibility of loving these kids in regards to how you provide for them. You know, Debbie has shared at Christmas time, she keeps lists, and, you know, even to the point of dollars and cents. And now, that's really kind of her issue, but she does it well. She's very sensitive in regards to the kids and their needs. And but I think it's important that we understand that we can become love-related. We don't have to have the biological bond. There's a couple of questions in our book. Why is it so hard to love another person's children, and why can't my spouse love my children? So I'm going to ask you, why is that so hard? We're Christians, right? God's lavishing his love on us on a regular basis. We take it in, but why is it so hard for us to love somebody else's kids? And my thought to that is, I think we're way too much into performance. If you perform, then I will love you. If you don't perform, then my love is going to be taken away from you. But see, it's almost a crime to not love a child because they're innocent, right? They get dragged into these blended families, and it was never, ever their hope, nor ours, that we'd end up divorced and in another relationship where our kids were drug in. I want to encourage you to understand that it is a high calling to love somebody else's kids and or to provide for them. We're called to be influencers, and in particular, because we love Christ, to be godly influencers. That's our responsibility. That's our job. One of the incredible things about our God is he is a God of second chances. I can remember newly divorced and going to Shadow Cliffs out in Pleasanton, and during the summer, and literally, I think my youngest daughter was probably 2 at that point, and my oldest daughter was maybe 3.5, and I remember having 2 beach chairs, a little cooler, kids hanging on my side, hanging on the chairs, and we're walking to the beach, and I just felt like the biggest loser. I just felt like everybody in that beach knew there's a divorced dad. So, and I'm sure on some level you probably have experienced that too. But the truth is, we serve a God of second chances. I remember thinking, nobody's ever going to love me again. And yet, I think I'm married to the most incredible woman in the world. And I would encourage you to feel exactly the same way with your wife and with your husband. We are fortunate. All of my single friends, there's one thing that they don't have and they strive to have, and that's that missing piece. They're looking for that man. My male friends, looking for that woman. Boy, the things that come out of our mouths, huh? Looking for that woman to complete them, right? They're lonely. In their heart of hearts, they're lonely. They're looking for that person. And you know what? We have that person. Takes me back to what I shared last night. How are you going to treat each other? Because when it's all said and done, that's really what's important. And I do believe that we live in relationships or in a society where people are reciprocate or choose not to reciprocate. If Debbie's kind and loving and generous to me, guess what? It's real easy for me to be kind, loving, and generous back to her. But if she withdraws from me, if she's unkind to me, guess what? My natural bent would be to be unkind and withdraw from her. But see, God calls us to a different place. He calls us to love like he does. And so, again, it doesn't matter what Debbie Alsdorf does, but it does matter what Ray Alsdorf does, because I am completely responsible, 200, 300%, for how I choose to love her. Even when she's unloving, God still says, love her, because she is deserving. This is the daughter of our God. You're the son, you're the daughter of the living God, our creator, the person who loves us most. I want to encourage you, don't look at these relationships as second best. They're really second blessed, right? And I think one of the hardest things for me in regards to the Belinda family was, how do I fit in? I didn't want to replace their dad. In my mind, they had a fine dad. I mean, he was kind of checked out and not very involved physically in their lives, but I didn't have history with this man. And so I had a very different opinion than maybe Debbie did, and maybe even in regards to the boys. But I just know that I struggled with my role in their lives and not wanting to replace their dad. And I bet you most everyone in this room feels exactly the same way. And if on some level you have tried to replace the other parent, I'm going to encourage you to pray about whether there's wisdom in that. Because again, you can be an influencer. You can bless these kids by how you live your life. You don't have to replace their parent. So, one of the things, and I'm really sad that I did this because I really love these boys, but I have to say emotionally, because I wasn't sure of my role, I think I held them emotionally at arm's distance. There's a book called The Blessing, and it's something that's really important for us to do, is to pass on the blessing to our children, to tell them how much you value them, how much you love them, how they're significant in their life, how they're going to be successful, to point them to God. Because God doesn't make any junk, right? He makes us different. We don't always understand why he made someone like this, but we have to trust that that's God's plan and that that plan is perfect. So divorce ends a marriage, but it doesn't end a family, right? It really takes us back to the whole biological bond and how significant that is. There's something really interesting that sometimes happens in divorce, and it's called the walkaway dad. Dads that were knee-deep, involved in their kids, really good dads, they walk away from their relationship with their kids. And very often this happens because they marry into a second relationship. That becomes the focal point. And sometimes physically even move away geographically. It becomes so difficult. I just remember as a police officer, you know, you're in and out of people's lives and you see the seedy side of life. And I can just remember having gone through a divorce. There would be times like on a Saturday morning when we would be dispatched to an address and a dad would be waiting out front of his children's house, his ex-spouse's house, waiting to pick up his kids for his custody. She wouldn't answer the door. He could hear voices inside. She wouldn't answer the door. Boy, the damage that those people were doing to their kids. And so that man, those men, eventually what do? They give up. They give up. But see, God calls us to a different place. He calls us up to not be giver-uppers, right? To continue to pursue what is right. Yeah, it's just so sad because in our own good intentions, we can do such damage. And anytime you're in doubt in regards to some action that you're going to take, some response to something that's unfair, I'm just going to encourage you, do the right thing. Pray about it. Let that small, still voice say, yeah, do that. No, don't do that. What's the value of having a relationship with Christ if it's not intimate and we're not calling on that relationship on a regular basis? We're not allowing God to be the kind of influence in our lives that he really needs to be. When my daughters were allowed to move to Colorado, it broke my heart. I can remember on the eve of them physically leaving the area, my ex was living with her grandparents in Castro Valley, and they lived up in the foothills and up at the top of, I don't remember the street, but at the top there was a park, and I just remember spending about an hour with my daughters up at that park, and it was just such a tearful time, and you know, because I knew I was going to have to let go and to release, and I knew our relationship was going to change, and but I wasn't one of those walk away dads. Being a dad was really, really important to me, and so there were times when it was really difficult, and thank goodness my wife, as we battled for custody over the course of time and spent a lot of money, Debbie would always say to me, hey, look, I know we don't have this money, but there's going to come a time when your daughters are going to know that you fought for them. Mm-hmm. And that's what we did. And being an inspector, obviously had relationships with judges and attorneys. And so we were getting ready to go to trial to prevent my ex from moving out of the area. And a judge who I had kind of a casual relationship, somebody who knew me, said, we just happened to see him in the hallway, and he said to me, Ray, I want to give you some advice. He said, there's new case law that will allow your daughters to move away because of a hardship. Now, my ex's new husband, he was the communications director for the Okno Hospital in Oakland, and anyways, it was during that period of time, if you lived in California, particularly the Bay Area, where they were closing down bases and facilities. And anyways, he's about to lose his job, and he was only about 3 years away from full retirement from the federal government. And so he began to look for another job. And I remember Debbie and I meeting with them, and we actually owned a cabin. And we said to them, look, we'll sell our cabin, and this is after we found out that he had accepted a job up in Colorado and up in the Denver area. We said to them, look, we'll sell our cabin, we'll put that money in a pot, and you can use that money to fly home anytime you want. You could work during the week, you could fly home on the weekend, because it would have been a substantial amount of money. And I just remember also the betrayal that happened when it was Easter vacation, and my ex, Patty, asked if they could take the girls. It was our time to have them, you know, trying to get along, if she could take them to Colorado because Fred was going to have to find a place to live. And so I said to them, that's fine, but don't enter into any contract. Don't buy a house. And guess what? We found out later that they had already bought a home. And when they took the girls there, they took them through this brand new, beautiful home. And they said to Megan and Ashley, Megan, this is your room. Ashley, this is your room. How do you battle that? Really, seriously, how do you battle that? But you know what? As much as I miss my dad or my daughters, my point here is being a stepdad really, in some ways, filled that void of me wanting to be a father. Being a father was really important to me. And being able to have the influence over two incredible young men ultimately filled that void to some point. So I just hope that everybody in this room, as difficult as these Belinda family relationships are, not only that you stay the course, that you understand on some level it's really noble to love somebody else's kids and to provide for them and to do exactly the same things that you would do for your own kids. There'll come a time when you'll be able to look back and you'll clearly know you did the right thing. So, can we take a short, maybe 5-minute break as we kind of regroup in bathrooms? So, okay,
sure.
Let's do that. Huh? I know, honey. Yeah. I want to make sure it's all back there. So.
Yeah. Thanks.
Hey guys.
Thank
you. Thank you. So.
Oh.
Okay, I see the communion's here. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Great. Okay. Yeah, really. You went all out, didn't you? Yeah. So nothing but the best for this group. So.
Thank you so much.
Spindler, where are you?
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, now is it on? Okay. In just a minute, as we close, Ray is going to lead you in communion so that you can go to the back table and take communion with your spouse. But before he does that, him and I had a conversation about whether I should do this part or not, and we decided yes. When I speak to women, I close every one of my speaking engagements with my mother's last words to me, and it's a promise that I made to her over 20 years ago. And the person that caused me a lot of pain in life left me the greatest legacy at the very end. And so we decided, since it's been so impactful to so many women and often also to mixed groups, that I would also share this with you before we take communion. My mother died of aplastic anemia. The reason I tell you that is because that meant she wasn't in any pain. She was on hospice. My sister and I were taking care of her at my sister's home. But she wasn't on any pain medications at all. In fact, it was the one time in her elderly life she was really on no medications. And so hospice told me to go in on a Monday and to tell her that it was okay to let go. So I went in and did the thing that you do. And I told her, Mom, we have a piece about you going to be with Jesus. It's okay. And she looked at me and she said, I'm not going anywhere without you and those boys. She had become fiercely attached to the boys, helping me during the divorce and everything. And then also living with us, with Ray and I. And I said, well, Mom, it's not our time, but it's yours. And she goes, well, that's easy for you to say because I'm here and I'm doing this alone. And I realized she was afraid. And in all my years of ministry, I was still naive about this death thing because I looked at her and I said, Mom, are you afraid? And she goes, yes, I am. She goes, we better believe that everything that we've believed in is real. And she goes, I just hope it was real. And it broke my heart because here's my mom who loved singing songs like One Glad Morning, When This Life Is Over, I'll Fly Away. And now here she is. She's getting ready to leave and she's scared to death. And so I began praying. That was on a Monday. I began just a simple prayer every time I could think of her, which was all day. So I kept praying like all through the day. Jesus, please do whatever you need to do so that my mama can die in peace because she knows you. She's walked with you for years. Please let her go in peace. I didn't expect that he was going to do what he did. I just wanted him to give her peace. And so Friday morning, the hospice nurse called me early in the morning and she said, it's her rally and she's asking for you. Code term for this is probably the end, her last burst of energy, and she's asking for you. So I raced over to my sister's house in the same city that we lived in. Nothing could have prepared me for what happened when I walked up the stairs into the room where she was in the hospital bed. She was sitting up really strong and straight for the first time to have energy like that. For a long time. When I walked in the room, she looked at me and with the biggest smile. She had gotten so thin from being ill that it was almost as if her teeth were stretched against canvas. I mean, it was just this big smile. And she said, Debbie, it's so fancy there. And I'm like, where? And she said, sit down and I'll tell you all about it. And so I sat on the chair next to her hospital bed. And she began telling me thing after thing after thing that she was experiencing and seeing. And the hospice nurse was writing everything down. I didn't know that our hospice nurse was a Christian. She had never had that conversation with us, but she was. And she was writing everything down, and she was mouthing from the corner of the room, "This is real, no meds. This isn't hallucinations." My mother was very sharp, very clear, and she was relating to me what she had seen of heaven and where she was going, and now that it was time for her to go. So just like that, after she told me, she said, "Debbie," she said, "go get the boys. It's time for me to go. I need to say goodbye to them." Now, you know, a few days later, I'm not going anywhere without you and those boys. And now she's like, "Go get the boys. It's time for me to say goodbye." And so in the meantime, though, before I left, she wanted me to hang her fanciest dress up in the doorway because it's so fancy there. She needed something beautiful to go when it was time for her to go. Anyway, so I went and got the boys, and we came back, and she wanted us to sing to her one last time, and so we sang to her, and of course, she told us what to sing. She was a little bit controlling, but that's okay. We sang to her this one last time, and as we sang, the boys were oblivious. They were 13 and 17, and she was looking around the room, smiling and nodding, and even making, like, it looked like she was making contact. It was really weird, and I was watching all this, and my kids were oblivious, and when we were done singing, she looked at my oldest son, who was in a lot of musicals and stuff back then that she would attend. And she said, "Oh, Justin, you sound so much better with the angels." And he goes, "Oh, Grandma, it's just us here." And she goes, "Oh, no." And then she goes, "Oh, that's right. You can't see them. Only I can. But it's time for me to go. They're here because it's time for me to go." And she goes, "And so come here, Grandma needs to say goodbye." And so she motioned the oldest one to her bed, and she took his head in her hands, and she said, "Justin, you've always been Grandma's big blonde boy, and I have never wanted to leave you." And then she goes, "But you know in the Bible where it says that he'll give us angels charge over us to keep us in all of our ways?" She goes, "They're real. I've seen them. I don't have to worry about a thing. You're in such good, loving hands all the time. Just promise Grandma one last thing before I go." And he's sobbing. They were very close. Like, he was the boy that when he got his license, he started taking Grandma with her wheelchair to JCPenney's every Saturday to get her little hair done. Then afterwards, they'd go to Carl Jr.'s together. And, like, you know, he just really helped us take care of Grandma. And he's sobbing, and he's saying, "Anything, Grandma, anything." And she says, "Justin, live like it's real, because it is." And so now he's in the corner crying, and she motions the 13-year-old to come up. She does the same thing with Cameron, ending with, "Cameron, promise me one last thing before I go." He's crying, "Anything, Grandma." And she goes, "Cameron, live like it's real, because it is." And so now the boys are in the corner, and they're holding each other, sobbing. First loss that they experienced in life as far as death. And they loved their grandma so much. And now she motions me to come to her bed. And I'm thinking it's going to be like, "My darling daughter, how you have walked the road of forgiveness with me," you know. Believe me, our life was complicated, right? But she was running out of energy, and she just motioned me to her bed, and I had a collared shirt on, and she grabbed my collar and pulled my face like this close to her. She just pulled me to her. And she looked at me. It was like she was looking through me, and she said, "Deborah." I was only called Deborah if it was serious or I was in trouble. So I paid attention. And she said, "Live like it's real, because it is." And I'm thinking, "Oh man, what is going on here? We are getting a message." And then she said, "Oh yes, and those women that you speak to, will you promise me that you will spend the rest of your life telling them to live like it's real, because it is?" And I made that promise over 20 years ago, and those were the very last words I ever heard my mother say. And even though it's not just women here, there are men here too, what she was wanting me to know was that this life isn't all there is. Eternity is real. Everything that we read in the Word of God is real. God in His Spirit, in His might, and His power is real. And so as we get ready to take communion, that is one thing that I felt like I wanted to leave all of us with and to remind myself of, that though we have ups and downs in life, and though sometimes these families aren't exactly what we thought we signed up for, and sometimes these families aren't exactly what we really hoped for, and sometimes we can't even deal with our own pain and our own frustration, and we don't know what the next step to take is, I want to encourage all of us, as I encourage myself today, that we need to live like it is real, that He is faithful, that He loves us, that He is powerful, that he is writing our story, that he has the end of our story, that all things, everything, will work together for good because he is shaping us into the image of his son, and that no thing, not life, not death, not hardship, not principalities, no thing will be able to separate us from the love of God that is in Christ Jesus our Lord. So that's what I want to leave you with, to live like it's real. Now Ray's going to lead us into communion.